Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Jason Mitchell back on the show. We're talking early ice. Jason's been doing quite a bit of fishing here for a little while, mostly on his home body of water, Devil's Lake, so we definitely talk about that. There's been some video stuff released already. Head to Jason Mitchell Outdoors YouTube channel and look at the latest video content that's been released from this year. Just some great stuff. We talk about it on this podcast and do just a little deeper dives on a couple different topics there. Just talking about Jason's process or approach, just things to think about for early ice strategies. And no matter where you're at, no matter what your species, no matter what your setup is, it definitely, you know, hearing Jason's approach to where he's at and what he's doing definitely gets you thinking about yourself and thinking about your own early ice strategies and processes. So great conversation there. Jason's been on the sports show circuit, traveling around, talking to a lot of people, just fielding questions. And so we get a little conversation there about what the vibes are in public about this ice season that is upon us. I mean, we've got ice in a lot of cool places. A lot of good fishing has been going on already. So here in the Midwest, especially the northern tier and our neighbors to the north there in Canada, there's been some good fishing already had. So just another great early ice conversation with Jason Mitchell. Let's get to it. The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. Download the app today to get free lake information in the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps, that and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool both on and off the water for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. This is the season for hunting and fishing opportunities in the state of North Dakota. If you hunt big game here, remember to do your part in protecting the herd. And that means knowing and following the regulations regarding chronic wasting disease here in the state of North Dakota, specifically the carcass disposal requirements. Any game carcass waste that is transported outside the hunting unit where the animal is harvested must be disposed of via a landfill or waste management provider. If you're hunting big game in North Dakota, it is your personal responsibility to educate yourself on these regulations and this information. Luckily for you, it's very simple. Just head down to the description of this podcast and click on the link. That is gf.nd.gov/CWD. That's where you're going to get the information on the regulations and all information regarding chronic wasting disease in the state of North Dakota. But anyways, so let's get started right here, Jason. Last time we talked, it was fall fishing, which we like talking about, but it's one of those shoulder seasons, right? It's like open water is kind of coming to an end. We talk about the industry and the retail world. It's like now we're in early ice time. I know you've been doing some fishing. We actually got together for a day of filming, which was really, really fun. We can talk about that too. But really, as far as topics and talkers, whatever you're interested in talking today, I think will be a great podcast. Talking about some fishing you've been doing. I know you've been doing the sports show circuit, so you've probably been having some really cool conversations there, probably doing some seminars, doing some Q&As. We can start wherever you want to start, man. I just want to cover what you've been up to lately as we're here now in this early ice season, man. Go ahead.
Yeah, you know, well, most of the fishing I've been doing so far has been on Devil's Lake. We had a fairly early freeze up. I mean, I was out there, what is it now? Middle of December. So, I mean, early December, very early December, I was out on the ice. And, you know, like most years, you know, the feeder lakes, you know, Lake Irving, Lake Alice, Chain Lake, Mike Lake, and that stuff north of Highway 2 freezes up a lot earlier. And so those were some of the first areas I was able to venture out on. I was able to venture out on some of the stuff south of Highway 2, but then it took a little more for, you know, for us to get more ice down there. So I started fishing pelican and some stuff on the Minnewaukan Flats. And, you know, I was finding, well, when I first started going up in Irving, you know, there's, you know, 3-4 inches of ice pretty quick. I mean, it was booming. It was making ice. And had some great walleye bites, you know, starting out. And then started, when I was able to get over in Pelican Lake and over in the Flats, I was able to, you know, find some walleyes over there and then some perch. And actually filmed a great crappie episode here with you. And I was kind of a multi-species. We caught big crappies, nice perch, nice walleyes. So that was kind of a cool deal. But, you know, one thing that I'm hearing a lot more buzz about, a lot more people talking about, is just how much fish spook from our presence on early ice. You know, we've long suspected that, you know, in different areas it seemed like it was maybe talked about in some regions more than others. But, you know, one thing I'm starting to realize is that you can definitely be too aggressive at early ice. So what I mean by that is if you're just ripping holes for the sake of ripping holes and you're just walking from hole to hole and, you know, giving it 5 minutes, or even if you get too aggressive with forward facing sonar and, you know, and try to move and chase those fish, it's like you're chasing ghosts. It's like those fish are always just scooting ahead of you. They're scooting away from you, you know. And in goodness, I mean, you know, you and I have filmed a lot of underwater stuff, right? And think of how many shots we've gotten where, you know, the camera's looking up through the ice and you see people's footprints, you know. I mean, you cast a shadow, they can see your footprints, you know, they can see that auger coming through, especially when that water clears up, you know. And so, and I think one of the things that's happening as well is with forward-facing sonar, you know, you can put that transducer in the water, see fish, and then you try to walk somebody over to drill a hole on top of those fish and they just spook away. You know, and so we've been seeing that and maybe getting a better understanding of it. And so, you know, that's one thing that, you know, I'm starting to hear a lot more anglers talk about, is just slowing down, being conscious of that, and being a little bit more methodical. You know, when we were first on Urban this winter, we were kind of in that search phase, you know, we're just trying to find fish, you know, so we're drilling holes and obviously have to move around to find fish. And there were times where we'd find, you know, what appeared to be, you know, a school of walleyes, maybe 6, 7, 8 fish in a school. They were scattered out over, say, 7 foot of water, but over the mud, just over the flat, over the basin. And, you know, say they were 50 feet away from you. You try walking over the top of those fish and drill another hole, and they'd be gone. They're just gone, you know. And then you think, okay, well, if I sit here, will the fish come back, right? And so if you sit in those type of spots, they're just so flat and random that I don't know how long you have to sit before that group of 6, 7 fish would happen to swim underneath you again, you know, because those fish are just wandering the abyss. And so then we started finding, you know, focusing on, you know, kind of going back to what we knew, you know, focusing on the old shoreline contour that's in that, say, 4 to 6 feet of water, especially where the contours are a little tighter and there's a little bit of rock mixed in on that contour. And we'd find fish in those spots. We'd walk in on those fish, drill a hole, the fish would spook. But then the fish would come back relatively quickly. You know, you're on a line, you're on something for those fish to follow. It's like being on a deer trail, you know. And, you know, and so that's something to consider, is, you know, especially like with boots, like with spikes, I think that's really loud on the ice. You know, when you only have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 inches of ice, you know, and dragging a sled, whatever it is, you know, we're just making a lot of noise. And it's just no different than open water fishing, right? There's times where you can run a boat over the top of the fish in 7 feet of water with a 1.5 ounce bottom bouncer to catch all the fish you want right below the boat. You know, like say middle of August, algae blooms, you know, it seems like warmer water temperatures, stained water, you know, you can, it's almost like the fish are attracted to the prop sometimes, you know. And then you get cold water, clear water, and those fish, it's impossible to catch fish right below the boat, you know. And so, you know, I think there's different factors that, you know, can vary how much the fish respond to our presence, but it's definitely there, you know. And starting to hear more and more people talk about it, you know. I think forward facing sonar, you know, obviously people use it to find fish, and but, you know, just watching fish move and watching how fish respond is pretty educational. You know, even how fish respond sometimes to the forward facing sonar beam, you know, on your tough days, it's like those fish just sink right down to the bottom, or they push away, you know, they won't even swim right underneath it, you know. And so, you know, that's one thing that, you know, kind of, I guess in some ways it's what's old is new, you know. And so, you know, pick a good spot, drill the, you know, it used to be where you want to drill as many holes as possible. I think the new message is early ice, when you don't have a lot of ice is when you first get on a spot, don't think I'm going to drill the most holes possible. Think, how can I drill the fewest amount of holes possible? And when I think of the key spots and let things settle down as quickly as possible. I think if you can do that, especially for like shallow walleyes, fish less than 15 feet of water, I think if you can do that, especially if this water is clear, the ice is clear, I feel like you catch way more fish.
Yeah, there, and I kind of want to, I might end up referencing that video. You know, go to YouTube, Jason Mitchell Outdoors YouTube channel, and watch that that Devil's Lake thing that you're talking about there that we worked on. Was it last week or the week before? But it there's a couple interesting things in there for me personally. Like, I'm the videographer for you, but I'm always learning when we're together fishing, and I love doing podcasts that kind of revolve around my observations like that. But one thing that you've really clued me in on, and we may have touched on this in earlier podcasts, but I kind of want to talk about it now, is like talking about the forward sonar piece where, and I'm guilty of this too, now that I have forward sonar, I feel like it's going to show me the mother load all the time. I feel like if I use it enough, if I drill enough holes, even if they're far apart, I feel like my expectation is that I should be seeing more fish, or I should be able to find that spot on the spot that just has like so many fish you can't ignore. But with this early ice, and it's kind of came up with that Devil's Lake piece, what I'm getting at is like, it can, you know, setting your expectation, like how many fish should you be seeing in an area? If you're talking about drilling less holes and they're going to, you know, take your time, they're going to swim under you, you take your turn when they make their pass under you, you know, as you're describing, but setting that expectation, like you're a lot smarter at knowing how many fish in an area does it really take to have a good day of fishing or a good session of fishing. And we were kind of talking about that on the ice. I kind of want to get you going on that topic a little bit more too, because I think I learned a lot from that and just gained some perspective, just had some realizations that I probably nowadays, even open water, it's like I feel like I'm trying to, now that I have forward sonar, I'm supposed to be able to go find the mother load somewhere. But that isn't always the case, or isn't always required for a good day of fishing.
Yeah, I mean, I think it can vary by body of water and it can vary by species. You know, even like when we're up on Lake Winnipeg, you know, we're kind of using it the same way. You know, we had a range set at about 100 feet, you know, whether we're in 8 feet of water or 15 feet of water. And I would just stick that pole down and I would just spin it, you know, 360 degrees. You know, I wasn't necessarily, I mean, you could see one big fish and chase it around until you catch it. But more so how I was looking at it, you know, because remember how windy it was and how cold it was. It's kind of a deal where I don't know if you could have fished outside for very long, you know. So it's kind of a deal where, okay, you got to set up a shelter, set up a flip over, run traffic. You got to just get in a zone where you're getting waves of fish that are coming underneath. You know, they come in through twice an hour, three times an hour, but you just need that flow of fish. And so, you know, put it in the water, spin around. And, you know, if you spin around, you know, say you have your range set at 70 or 100, and, you know, you see 15, 20 fish that you can just see in that zone, you know, just set up there and let things work, let things come by you. But you can definitely look for too much at times. And I think on Devil's Lake, that's really easy to do because a lot of these fish are really bottom orientated. You know, like even when we were up on Urban and Alice, you know, you know, it's kind of like 2D sonar in some ways, in the sense that you don't see every fish, okay? And I know that you can prove it because fish will appear and then they'll go right down to the bottom and disappear. Now, they might be swimming out of the beam. Your beam is really narrow, okay? So they swim in and out of it. But when they look like they're swimming in and out of the bottom, like a worm coming up out of the bottom and going back into the bottom, the thing you got to remember is that the target separation on forward-facing sonar units isn't as good as even like what you're used to with 2D sonar, okay? So there's a bigger blind spot. And so you look at, like, for example, these perch on Devil's Lake. When they're in 30, you get that deeper water. You'd think that forward-facing sonar would be just killer for finding schools of perch on Devil's Lake, you know? But you say you go over to East Devil's Lake and you're out over 40 feet of water, 46 feet of water, you put that down, and it's amazing. You can have quite a few fish around and not see them, you know, or just see very few, you know. And the reality is there's a lot more, but they're right on the bottom, and it's kind of a deal where those fish are on the bottom and they're not moving really aggressively. I feel like it's easy to miss them. And so I feel like, you know, you're only getting the fish that are, say, 2 feet off the bottom, you know, or higher in some cases, especially when you get further away. And so, you know, And there's different times of the year, like midsummer, late summer. I think that's something that we're starting to understand is, you know, most of the fish are up off the bottom that time of year, you know, 4 or 5, 6, 7 feet off the bottom. They're all over, you know. But it seems like, you know, I don't see that as much in the wintertime, you know, or you'll see fish that are moving really fast up off the bottom, and you know, they're white bass. You can kind of tell by their shape and just how they move, you know. But and then even the shape of the school, you know, be more vertical. You know, they're just moving much faster than what you typically see with walleyes and perch. But you know, we're learning more all the time. Yeah, I mean, you can definitely look for too much. I think that's kind of a, I don't know, it's a fine line. I mean, you can talk yourself into staying way too long where there aren't any fish by telling yourself, you know, they don't really show up on the depth finder, you know. But on the flip side, you can also talk yourself into leaving fish and just trying to look for too much, you know. And so, like on a deep piece of structure, for example, with 2D sonar, even you're going up and down over rock piles and stuff. You know, if you see a handful of fish, my experience is that there's way more than what you see, and you'll catch them. Your success will often prove that, in the sense that you might see 4 or 5 fish as you're graphing it, and you end up putting lines in, and you know, you catch 10, you know. Or even sometimes with side imaging, you know, sometimes you're in a situation where you'll see almost every one of them. The sand is perfect, and the, you know, the pitch is perfect, and you come over the spot perfect, but you know, it's easy to miss them. And a lot of times, for example, most bottoms aren't perfect, you know, and you'll just see a handful of them, almost like openings where you'll see a deer. Like, you're not going to see a deer in the bush, but when that deer steps in an opening, that's when you see it, right? That's when you notice it. And so gaps in the rocks, gaps in weeds can kind of be like that sometimes, you know, where, you know, there's other times where you can guess that something's a fish, but it's harder to know 100% for sure, you know, unless they like your spot locked and it pops in and out. Or, you know, forward facing sonar, a lot of times, you know, we're, especially like with weeds, shallow water, we're pulling the scale in, you know, maybe even using it at 50 feet, 40 feet, and blowing that screen up bigger and basically camping out a little longer and waiting for the fish to move. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, like for example, with crappies over a basin, you can be really, really aggressive with a forward-facing sonar. You put that transducer down the hole, you're sweeping it, and you're looking for that big clump of fish, okay? There's no doubt in your mind when you see it, okay? When fish are on the bottom, you have to slow way, way, way down. Okay. In a sense, you'll see a handful of fish, but then you got to wait for fish to move, and then you'll see a few more. It's like, you have to wait for the fish to move. You know, if you're in weeds, or if you're, you know, seeing, like, remember when we were up at Lake of the Woods doing that crappie episode last winter, you know, we dropped forward facing sonar down in that spot. We saw fish just handfuls of fish, you know, on a 70 foot range, you know, you might see 4 or 5. And then you turn it and you see 1, 2. And then you turn it again and see 3, 4. And they were spread out, you know, and it didn't look anything special, but you know what? They're the right size. And there end up, that spot was loaded with fish.
Yeah.
You know? And so you think about, okay, we only caught a glimpse of the fish, or maybe 1 foot, 2.5 feet off the bottom. But when we put Vexlars down and start fishing those fish, you know, most of the fish were glued to the bottom. They'd come up maybe 15 inches off the bottom to eat. They were just tight to the bottom for some reason, you know. And so, you know, I think, you know, it's easy to miss fish that are right on the bottom with that.
Yeah, and it, just another tool. But yeah, setting that expectation a little bit, because, you know, forward sonar is such a hot topic. I just want to touch on that. For me, especially with ice fishing, you know, a guy just gets so amped up, and you want it to be the key to all your success, because it's such a fun thing to use. But just realizing, you know, that you're realizing what the potential is, but paying attention to all the other factors. Cause we didn't even bring the active target out on that Devil's Lake deal. You were just more in tune with the type of spot you wanted to be on. And maybe we can kind of talk about that a little bit. Some early ice Devil's Lake where, you know, the same bite that you're talking about here, this early ice, be more in tune with the type of bite you want to be on.
Yeah. And to be fair too, I mean, part of the reason I didn't bring it with is just, I mean, obviously got the big pull and lugging it out there. We were on snowmobile, whatever. I already knew it was out there. And so, but you know, up until that day that we filmed, I had been using it, you know, at least to try to find fish or learn something. But, you know, the other thing too is, you know, if it's a fish, even if it's in one spot, you know, fish flutter way more than a rock. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
And so, Sometimes, you know, that's a key, key for, you know, picking off fish that look like they are on the bottom, is, or if they're way out on the edge of your range, is if you just get a little bit of flutter, almost like it's like swaying like a weed in the current, you know, it just kind of gives a little flutter, then typically that's a fish. If it doesn't flutter so much, then it's, you know, something else, you
yeah,
know.
Fuzzy.
But
you know, fuzzy. I was talking to a guy last summer that Scott Roloff, he's a tournament guy that they won over on one of the Great Lakes or whatever. I think they won the NTC championship or whatever, and he was like, they were just looking for fish that were fuzzy. It's like, well, they were fishing rocks, and if there was a rock that was buzzing, looked like it had like electricity hooked up to it on the graph,
yeah,
it's like that was
exactly
the difference.
It just flutters, it just moves a little bit, you know. And so, yeah, I mean, that's the whole key with, you know, trying to interpret, you know. But no, you know, so it's kind of a deal where, and maybe this is a story that has to be told more, you know, people talk about drilling hundreds of holes in a day and move, and, you know, being really aggressive, you know. And there's a time and place for that. And goodness, we've done plenty of that over the years. But there's also a time and place for, you know, drilling the fewest holes possible and setting up on a spot and just letting the fish come to you. And, you know, something that can be really common, and the reason that could be appealing for so many people is that, you know, physically not everybody can or wants to drill that many holes. They just want to go out somewhere, sit in a fish house, be comfortable, you know, and just, you know, catch enough fish through the day to keep it entertaining. And, you know, one of the best opportunities for that, in my opinion, are what we call secondary basins. You know, it could be a bowl or a depression inside of a big weed flat. It could be like on Devil's Lake, we've got these sloughs that basically, you know, at one time there was these small wetlands, and then as a lake rose, it encompassed these wetlands. So now you have a secondary basin that's, you know, much smaller than, say, the Devil's Lake basin. And, you know, these fish will just pile into these secondary basins, and so they're a lot smaller as a rule of thumb. And I think what happens, these fish just swim in a circle around that bowl. I mean, they just do hot laps around it. And so if you, you know, get in the zone where those fish are coming through, you know, you can just sit in one spot and catch fish through the day. You know, as long as the fish keep moving, you can sit in a spot and just keep intercepting fish. You know, and in my mind, you know, that works the best if you're by yourself, right? This isn't something that gets better as 15 different vehicles show up, okay? If you have people on each side of you, for example, they're catching fish before they get to you, you know? And so, you know, it's probably one of the biggest reasons to avoid crowds is that, you know, you got people on each side of you. Where are these fish going to come from, you know? And, you know, and so like right now, early ice, you know, a lot of these places haven't been fished yet or fished much. And so it's just a prime opportunity where you can just sit in one spot and run traffic, you know, and have a great day of fishing, you know, where you catch enough fish to keep it interesting. And you know, you can say it's a lazy way of fish or an enjoyable way of fish, which most people, now they're saying, you know, I'll sign me up, I'll take that. Yeah. But also, too, I think sometimes it can actually be one of the more effective ways to fish if those fish are spooking off of your presence. You know, if you're walking across that ice, 4 inches of ice, your ice cleats on, dragging a sled, hauling your gear, and, you know, you start ripping, you know, 50 holes through an area, and it's 6 feet deep, 7 feet deep with 4 inches of ice, boy, you can really do a lot of damage to a spot. I mean, those fish just run for their lives at times. I mean, you never say always or never. I'm saying that this is always the case, but I've seen it enough where I think it's often the case, okay? And, you know, you've been better off just going to what you think is the best spot, drilling one hole, give it half an hour. What comes by in half an hour after you know, after things settle down, you know? Is it one fish? Is it two fish? Is it 10 fish? You know, and I suppose it'd be, you know, it'd be no different than hunting. Is it, you know, there's times where you might be better off in one spot and just having some patience and letting things come to you versus thinking you're going to go through the woods and, you know, sneak up on a deer, you know? So, yeah, I think it's just a deal with, you know, we're learning all the time, you know, and what's funny is learning all the time, you know, it's kind of an example of what's old is new. I'll give you an example. I think we were down in South Dakota. We were with Merwin and a couple of guys, and we had forward-facing sonar. We were on one of those perch sloughs down there. It was maybe 7-8 feet deep at the deepest, and those fish were out over the basin, and there was maybe 4 or 5 inches of ice, maybe 6 inches at the most, very most. And people weren't really driving machines out. I think we were, I don't remember if we had a four-wheeler or if we, I think we walked out. I think we just dragged our gear and walked out. And when we were walking out, I don't know if you remember this day, but when we were walking out, there was like, I don't know, a handful of people just fishing, you know, not far from the boat ramp. and they were on buckets with bobbers and minnows, and they were catching some fish, and we were talking to them or whatever. And well, we kept walking, you know, and, you know, good luck. Yeah, good luck, guys, you know, whatever. They're, you know, good, friendly guys. And we chased those fish around all day with forward facing sonar. And there's, I don't know, maybe six or seven of us fishing. We caught a fair amount of fish, but it's not like we really wound up on them. It's not like we ever got more than four or five out of a hole. It's like we just, like they were just, those fish just kept moving so much. Like we couldn't move enough. It's like we were chasing ghosts. We'd see them, we'd drill a hole on top of them, maybe catch one, two, and they'd be just, they were gone so quickly. And I don't remember how many fish we caught. I don't even remember who all was fishing. I'm guessing there was maybe six or seven of us. But I just remember thinking, you know, I mean, we had an okay day, but we worked our tails off. Like we drilled a lot of holes that day. And I just remember talking to those guys when we were walking back off the ice. They were still sitting in the same spot. And I remember just talking to them and realizing, you know, they had a better day than we did. You know, there's like three of them fishing and four of them, I can't remember, but, you know, they had nicer fish and, you know, they had, I could just tell looking in their bucket and talking to them, like they had a way better day than we did sitting in one spot with bobbers and minnows. And the reality is that we probably just pushed those fish around the racetrack that many more times for them to catch.
Yeah.
You see what
yeah.
I'm saying?
I remember exactly that story, and it was actually really hard to film too. Cause we were just, man, we were just moving so much.
Oh yeah. We could hardly get the camera in time.
We were just wore out. We were so wore out.
Yeah. Yeah. You remember that. And so talk about what's old is new, right? That's how we started, right? And then all this equipment evolves and all these ideas evolve and all this information, you know, comes into play, you know, and you kind of, you know, sometimes you kind of forget some lessons, you know, but, you know, that was kind of an, I don't know how many years, that was probably 4 or 5 years ago now. Forward facing sonar was fairly new at the time. And, you know, but I remember that just kind of sticking in my head thinking, huh. You know, sometimes you don't know as much as you think you do or you wish you did, you know.
The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. Download the app today to get free lake information in the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps. That and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool both on and off the water for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. This is the season for hunting and fishing opportunities in the state of North Dakota. If you hunt big game here, remember to do your part in protecting the herd. And that means knowing and following the regulations regarding chronic wasting disease here in the state of North Dakota, specifically the carcass disposal requirements. Any game carcass waste that is transported outside the hunting unit where the animal is harvested must be disposed of via a landfill or waste management provider. If you're hunting big game in North Dakota, it is your personal responsibility to educate yourself on these regulations and this information. Luckily for you, it's very simple. Just head down to the description of this podcast and click on the link. That is gf.nd.gov/CWD. That's where you're going to get the information on the regulations and all information regarding chronic wasting disease in the state of North Dakota. Yeah, they definitely had more fish and nicer fish. And yeah, they were real nice about it. But yeah, that was back when we were going to a lot of places and very few people had forward sonar. So like you kind of stuck out like a sore thumb if you had it.
Yeah.
Because you were the only ones that were moving around so much and, you know, guys were huddled together. We were all looking at a screen and whatever. Yeah, I totally remember that. But yeah, there was definitely a little eye-opening deal where it's like, gosh, you can see the fish. We know we know we're around them, but what are we doing? What are we doing? You know, but you know, the light bulb comes on.
I mean, and when you're in shallow water, especially, I feel like sometimes that power can spook them too. And I think that's one thing that was happening that day is you get that beam on them, which, you know, you're looking at, depending on the brand that you have, I mean, you're looking at 18 to a 24 degree beam, you know? And so, you know, 40 feet away, 100 feet away, it's not like it's that wide. I mean, when you're casting, if you're, you know, it feels like your beam is maybe, I don't know, maybe the size, the width of a pool table, you know, when you get out to maybe 70 feet, if that, you know, and it's like you'd get that beam on those fish and they would just push away, you know, or they would drop tighter to the bottom. You know, it's like you could move them with it, you know, and, you know, that's something we're starting to understand better too, is that, you know, I think, you know, I mean, to be fair, I think everybody or most people would benefit from using it and having it, and that just what you learn is just, I mean, it's completely changed some of the things that I thought about fishing or fish behavior and how fish respond to different things. But, you know, when it comes time to catch them, you know, man, I'm not giving up my Vexilar. I can tell you that. I mean, that's
especially when you talk about fish being pinned to the bottom and seeing fish coming up out of the bottom.
Yeah, being able to see fish in the bottom and then just being able to read the body posture of the fish so much. You know, when they cock and move their fins and stuff, you just get that flutter on your Vexilar signal. And, man, that's where it's at, you know, as far as being able to really fine-tune a tough bite especially. You know,
yeah, so. And like talking about this early ice and trying to, you know, have the smallest presence possible on the ice and drill the fewest holes, just, you know, just talking about that, I want to maybe kind of get your version of the story utilizing remote lines or just set lines in general, like remote lines out there kind of searching for fish for you versus when you feel more comfortable just having a set line next to your jig and stick. Maybe you're calling them in with this, but then they decide they want to bite, you know, the jig and the minnow or whatever, like utilizing those secondary lines when you're trying to drill the fewest holes possible or just walk around, you know, on, you know, not hole hop as much, utilizing secondary lines where you can. I kind of want to maybe get your version of that story here on early ice.
Well, so here's just, this is just my opinion, but I don't like set lines to look for fish. And what I mean by that is, okay, if I'm looking for fish, I'm making big moves. I'm breaking down spots. Like I go to a point that I think there should be some fish. I give a little bit of time. I'm not marking a fish. Okay, I'm not going to go to the next point necessarily. I'm going to do something different. Like I'm going to try to make bigger moves to, you know, to try to put a pattern together. Now, once I find fish on a point, it would make sense to see that there's fish on the next point if you need another spot, right? But the way I look at it is to find fish, you know, you got to make big moves. And every time you put more stuff out on the ice, it makes that a lot harder. Okay. I mean, I see it all the time. People unload their stuff. They unload their fish house. They unload this. They unload that. It takes half an hour just to unload everything out of their pickup. Then they go and they start drilling all these holes. And then you got somebody following behind with an ice skimmer cleaning out the holes. And goodness, they've got an hour into it. And, you know, they've maybe been fishing for, I don't know, you know, 20 minutes or whatever. Well, then it's time to move. So then you have to pack up all that stuff and start that process all over. The way I look at it is when you're trying to find fish, you know, if there's a lot of fish there and nobody's fished it yet but you, and you're in that search mode, you know, you just hit the key spots on that spot, what you think would be the key spots, give a little bit of time, they're either there, they're not, right? And if, say, if there's 50 walleyes on a point, okay, there's going to be, not all of them are going to be in this exact same depth doing the exact same thing. They're going to be some, maybe some are in 15 feet, a couple of them are in 15 feet. Maybe the bulk of them are in 22 feet. And there's a few more 28, 32 feet, you know. And when you're trying to find fish, I like to, you know, I like to be a lot more mobile and I don't like to have stuff that weighs me down. And if every time I make a move, I got to pick up, you know, like in North Dakota, three extra lines per person. That's a, you know, that really bogs you down. Okay. That eliminates how many spots you can fish in a day. Okay. Where I do like to use set lines when I know that there's fish in a spot. Okay. This is where I'm going to be fishing today. Or this is where I'm going to be fishing tonight. What I don't know is how deep most of the fish are going to be or when they're going to move up and down on a piece of structure. To me, that's where set lines shine. Okay. Whether it's using tip ups or tip downs or some type of a, you know, hook setting device where it's legal. You know, maybe you, like I say, if you're fishing Sakakawea on a point and, okay, this is where we're going to be tonight. This is where we're set up. You know, maybe I caught caught one fish at 11 o'clock during the middle of the day, and I marked one more that I think was a walleye, and I missed it. And thinking, okay, when the sun gets low, you know, that last hour of daylight, this should be decent or good. But I don't know if those fish can be 30 feet, 36 feet, 18 feet, 24 feet. I'm anticipating 20 to 24 feet, but, you know, until you catch fish, you don't know. That's where I like to use set lines and spread things out just to kind of monitor that ebb and flow of how those fish move up and down a piece of structure. Okay. Say if a dead stick keeps going off and deeper, okay, maybe I better go out here and spend a little bit more time jigging. And not to mention the fact that every fish adds up. It's a fish you wouldn't have caught otherwise. And there's situations too where the dead sticks outfish the jiggy lures. You know, see that a lot, you know, some of the Minnesota and Wisconsin lakes, especially where, you know, you just have a lower density of fish. It still could be a good fishery, but there's just, you don't have as much competition. And sometimes, you know, you put a sucker minnow or a big minnow on a tip up, and, you know, that's the thing that almost always gets bit, you know. And so there's different reasons to use dead, you know, set lines, you know. You know, obviously you can have one in your house or right next to, if you're jigging, you know, maybe the fish comes in on the jig lure, but it hits the dead stick. And, you know, but I like to use those extra rods where I know there's fish versus when I'm in that search mode, I like to do less. Now, like, there's places where you see variations, like Fort Peck is like a trap line. Okay. People put their name and number on a tip up. You can use 5 tip ups per person. They check them once every 24 hours. And I mean, you've seen, there'll be guys that have like two tip ups in the dredge cuts. They'll have one tip up in Duck Creek and one tip up over here. And their tip ups are literally miles apart, you know.
Yeah, like city, like in different counties, like different townships.
Yeah, and they'll check them, you know. They're supposed to check them, I think, every 24 hours. I think some of these people check them once a week, you know.
It's crazy.
And you know, and you know, they find and catch fish that way, and that's a whole different deal, you know. I personally don't like to do it that way, because, you know what, I don't like gut hooking fish. And I don't know, I mean, I've been to Fort Peck where I think a mistake that I make is spreading my tip ups too far apart. It's like, yeah, I get flags way over there. I come back an hour later, 2 hours later, and it's flags up, and there's no line left on my tip up. A lake trout got me or something. You know, it's just it's like I haven't found where it's been something I fell in love with, you know. Yeah. But, and so, like, lesson I've learned on Fort Peck, for example, is, yeah, don't get lulled into spreading your tip ups half a mile apart. And, you know, you got 5 tip ups per person. So, I mean, you can really cover an area. It's like, you know, if you can't like see the tip up pop up and get to it really, really quickly, you know, it's, I don't know. I feel like, after doing it, I was wasting my time, you know. And even like over there, remember all the salt cedar we encountered?
Yeah.
You get a big fish on. I mean, you couldn't get to the tip up quick enough.
No, they're wrapping you around.
No, remember we were wrapping the line on the spool just so the fish could only take 3 to 4 feet and then stop. And just hope that the fish wasn't so big it could break, you know, 40 pound or 60 pound Dacron.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, yeah, but you know, you get different areas, and you know, there's different things. So.
Yep. No, good examples too. The spectrum of what's out there and what people are dealing with. But yeah, I think that's all key for sure. Just trying to be efficient, finding fish, and then efficient catching fish. And sometimes in early ice, where, you know, there's only so much ice, that there's only so many shoreline spots that are available. It's like it can be a real key component, you know, to just maximizing what you're trying to accomplish in a spot. But unless you're giving yourself that the opportunity to move to more spots and check more spots that day, it can just be really inefficient. I think probably a lot of people like myself, there's been times in my career where it was just normal for me to think I was just going to utilize all my stuff all the time as much as I can. And but you know, looking at that time management, especially in the middle of the day when you want to be checking other spots and whatever, it definitely limits you in a day, much less a weekend or on a fishing trip or a whole season.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, I'm talking about, you know, like fishing Devil's Lake, right? Where say I start out in the morning and maybe I fish some shallow stuff in Budweiser Bay. Sun gets a little higher. Maybe I check some offshore stuff out in front of Old Mill Bay and in a little bit deeper water. Then I run over to Cactus Point, Bird Island. I end up down by Fort Todd. You know, I'm just checking different things. And maybe middle of the day, as a rule of thumb, I might be fishing more deeper rocks, you know. And then, you know, later in the day, I might move up shallow again. Okay, but you know, I'm checking several spots, and then whatever spot looks the most promising during the day is where I want to be that last hour of daylight, you know. And I can check a lot more spots if I don't get bogged down with tip ups every time I check a spot. But you know, I've got GPS mapping. I know right where to go on each spot, or at least I hope so or think so, you know. And and just, you know, making those big moves. You know, maybe it's a deer if you're in another area, say you're fishing some river backwater, and you've got one spot that's 50 yards by 50 yards, and you got to give it an hour to know. And, you know, and it's really random where the fish could be anywhere. Maybe it's a deer, you got to put a handful of tip ups out and just see what happens in an hour. And then you pick up your tip ups and do it again somewhere else, you know. And so I think if you were to be fair, I mean, most of my experience is on Devil's Lake. And one thing I find as I travel and film with all kinds of great anglers, different bodies of water, is that, you know, different ecosystems, different environments can definitely foster different, methods and methodology, I guess, as far as how you approach something, you know. And so I'm not saying that, you know, what I do is the end all be all. I mean, it's finely tuned for what I know on Devil's Lake, but you know, you go to a different body of water and it's a whole different animal. I mean, like I remember there's some flowages in southern Wisconsin, northern Illinois, where there's some decent walleyes in them, and they're only 7 feet of water, and there wasn't ever that much ice. And that was a deal. People would put tip-ups out, then they'd literally sit on a rock on shore and wait for a tip-up to pop up. You know, and it was just really random, shallow slots, you know, just sand, smooth sand. You weren't fishing like structure, you're just fishing areas, you know. And if you were to try to find fish those spots, that's how you'd find them. Is you'd put your tip-ups out and go sit on a rock on shore and wait. You know, and they're there, then you keep fishing. If they're not, then you try somewhere else, you know. So, I mean, just kind of there almost has to be like a disclaimer. Anything you say.
Yeah. No, that's good. It's good. It makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense. It's like everybody's going to have their own little sort of version of it for themselves. But having that thought process, hearing your thought process lets me know that there's things I got to be, you know, things I got to be thinking about. And a lot of it's like self-reflective. It's like, what am I doing? You know, what can I control? You can't control the fish. You can't control the weather and all that stuff. So that stuff you're reacting to, but it's like, what are some of the things that are under my control? It's like, when do they make me more efficient for finding or catching fish? And when do they make me more inefficient? That's like, you know, creating that balance. Yeah, no, I think that's really, really good. Now we got a few minutes left here, man. Good conversation, talking early ice on Devils and what you've been up to. But I know you've been doing kind of the sports show circuit, and I'm not with you all the time on that stuff, and I'm always curious. You always have good conversations. I know you do the seminars, you do Q&A's. If we got a few minutes left, what do you feel like have been some of the good conversations that you've been kind of having on the street heading into this ice season? There's got to be a lot of positivity and optimism in the industry, right? Because we've got some good ice in a lot of places, and it's not even Christmas yet. Last year was totally different. So, you've got to be having some good conversations. What would be some fun topics that you've been talking about kind of on the road lately?
Well, yeah, we have been hitting it pretty hard. So we did several of the Shields Ice Fest, and boy, those were awesome. And then just got done, you know, at the St. Paul Ice Fishing Show here a little bit ago. And, you know, probably the big thing is, you know, there's just a lot of positivity and optimism this year. You know, people are excited to get out of the ice. You know, for some people, you know, I'm kind of in a bubble where I'm at. We always get ice in Devil's Lake, and we're always traveling to places where there is ice, you know, whether it's Canada or Lake of the Woods or wherever, you know, there's plenty of places we can go and ice fish. And, you know, we're lucky. We get to see some of the best of the best for all the places we get to go to and travel to and the people that we get to fish with. You know, I mean, I got to pinch myself every day, but, you know, talking to people, you know, some people have had, you know, a couple of tough years where, you know, either there's too much snow or there wasn't enough ice or whatever. And, you know, everything's kind of shaping up so far where this could be more of a traditional normal winter. And goodness, you know, we get some of these winters where some of these people can get their hard-sided fish houses out on the lake and, you know, just get out and enjoy it for, you know, a good chunk of the winter, which is kind of how this is shaping up to be. You know, people are just over the moon excited. And so that was probably the funnest thing to see, is that just the excitement, the enthusiasm people have, you know. People just couldn't wait to get started. They couldn't wait to, it's almost like there's like this pent-up demand. Like people are, you know, they wanted revenge. Like people were ready to get even, you know, even with Mother Nature, you know. And so that was fun to see.
Yeah, man, I think that's really just the overall vibe. You know, it's been really, really fun to get, you know, write-ins and just get some feedback on the podcast too. It just seems like everybody's excited for more ice stuff. And I don't even know if I recall, you know, coming into the season like this, just having people just, you know, just writing in, just looking forward to the content, you know, where it's like, after last year, you know, just some people, you think about like Twin Cities, like you were down in the St. Paul Ice Show. It's like, think about Southern Minnesota last year, where there's probably a lot of people that consider themselves, you know, avid or at least just passionate amateur anglers that, you know, they traditionally fish every year with their free time. And they probably only got out a couple times, if that, you know, on their home bodies of water. Like you say, if you didn't plan on traveling or going to a destination, it's like there's big parts of the Midwest, you know, last year, people that they probably still got fresh line on their spools that, you know, on their reels that didn't even hardly get wet. So yeah, pent up demand. It definitely seems like there's a lot of good action out there. Good vibes.
Yep,
right absolutely. On, man. Well, dude, we're really good on time. This is a fun conversation. I knew I wanted to have it with you now, just kind of coming into this season, talk about the things that you've been up to. I love, you know, kind of hearing your strategy with things. And it's such a sort of an evolving thing with you and so many other top anglers, you know, that forward sonar piece, where just what we're learning with it. Again, the point that I just beat it like a dead horse, but if even what we're learning with it, you know, if you don't have it, there's still so much to learn from it. And that perspective of, you know, what's old is new, and the way we've always fished for so many years is still just such a good strategy, just a combination for success, especially this time of year, just getting into a good lane of traffic of fish. And, you know, just drilling a few holes, hunkering down, keeping the fish house warm, keeping everybody's, you know, feet still on the ice and not driving around, not tracking around, not drilling so many holes and just being noisy. It's almost like the noise on top of the ice is the structure you got to try to avoid or be on the outside edge of. If there's a community spot that's starting to get lit up, even if the fishing reports are good, it's like, you know, you're still looking for those quiet places is just where there's just so much fun potential to be had. And I just like that.
Yeah, I mean, usually spots don't get better when the people pile in, right? I mean,
gotta remember that. Gotta remember that. And awesome, man. Well, I'll let you go, man. I love it. Great recommendations. Great. And unless there's, you know, 1-2 minute, any type of a closer that you can think of, we're so good on time. There's a great update, and we'll get caught up with you for sure here, whether it's midwinter or late winter or whatever, however the season kind of shapes up. We'll obviously be getting caught up with you too.
Yeah. Down the road here. Good.
So whatever we miss, we'll get onto it.